I have to confess that every once in a while in my life, I have asked myself the question, why am I doing this? Now, maybe you've never asked yourself that question. Most recently, it has to do with the fact that, like so many others, life is a rat race. Every day is like you're on the treadmill, and one of the things about a treadmill is it just keeps trucking along and you go absolutely nowhere. And so often, one's day just feels like a lot of activity, a lot of movement, a lot happening, but I'm not going anywhere. And I might ask, why am I doing this? That can be true in responsibilities that you have. That can be true in the workplace. That can be true in so many different areas of life. And yet, far too infrequently, we ask the question, why am I doing this? On the other hand, in many days gone by, during those youthful days, typically, I would say, high school and college, you'd get sucked into doing things because everyone was doing it. Or you thought it would be exciting to do something, and you begin to realize, hey, this isn't all that it was cracked up to be. Or maybe you get into trouble because of what you were engaged in doing. And due to either guilt, frustration, fear of reprisal, you might ask the question, why am I doing this? And the worst answer would be, because everybody else is. When we go through life, it's very important for us to know, why are we doing what we're doing? And in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon reminds us that individuals, as they go through the experiences of life, far too infrequently really take the time to pause and reflect and say, why am I doing what I'm doing? I'd like you to turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. And we want to look together at verses 7 through 12. And just as a quick reminder, we know that the book of Ecclesiastes is one of the wisdom books of the Bible, provided to give us a skill in some area of life. And the area of life that the book of Ecclesiastes addresses is a very fundamental, important question for every one of us, no matter how young or how old. And that is, where is life's meaning? Where is it I find fulfillment, satisfaction, and purpose in life? And Solomon has the premise to say, if you are looking for satisfaction, fulfillment, and meaning in life, in the temporal things of this world, you are going to be sorely disappointed because it isn't found in the temporal. Instead, he says, it's a life that is focused and founded upon the rock, the Lord God himself. And so he has been developing that theme. And he has been analyzing all the different things that human beings pursue and in sometimes deceivingly think to themselves, boy, this is really living. When in reality, they're going to be coming up short and find that they are still empty. And so in verse 7, Solomon says, then I looked again. In other words, he's continuing the same line of thought. Individuals engage in activities in which they think they are going to find satisfaction, meaning, and fulfillment in life. And I am looking at another pursuit, another aspect of human beings living in this world and realizing that that does not satisfy as well. He says, I looked again at vanity, that is emptiness, lack of fulfillment under the sun in this world. And here's what he looked at. There was a certain man without a dependent. That word is a second. In other words, it could be without a companion, without someone with him. and most often would be taken without a spouse or a wife. In addition to not having a spouse, a wife, a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother. In other words, he has no relatives, he's all alone, and yet there is no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes are not satisfied with riches, and he never asks, "For whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity, and it is a grievous task. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three is not quickly torn apart." Now in this section, Solomon particularly has been looking at some of the things that strike us in life as being heart-rending. He talked about the fact that there's injustices in life. He's talked about the fact that there's great oppression where one man shows cruelty to another. He's talked about the fact that when we look at the different activities that are pursued by human beings, it's often based on a competitive nature where I have to be number one, I have to be better than someone else. It's an egotistical way of looking at life and trying to use and manipulate people for my own selfish ends. And now he looks at another circumstance. It's an individual whose life is consumed with his labor, with his job. And in that, it seems like in our day, the best way to characterize this individual is that this individual is a workaholic. His whole life is devoted to his occupation. His whole life is devoted to his job. He lives for his job. He gets up and he's already got plans of what he's going to do to get ahead. And at night, he doesn't even cease from reflecting upon, thinking about, looking at what he might do to improve and increase the profits, the benefits that he receives in this employment. Not only is it true that this individual is a workaholic, but in another way, we can say, since this individual doesn't have anyone related to him, no one that is partnered with him, he is almost a recluse miser. He keeps hoarding all of the gains that he gets from his profit to himself. And he becomes impressed with the fact of, look how much I have benefited. I have gained from all my labor. And I have been engrossed in my activities, and I have been gaining all of this for myself. And as he is involved in gaining all of this for himself, he realizes that no matter how much he has, guess what? He still wants more. His eyes are not satisfied with his riches. We've talked before about trying to keep up with the Joneses, that competitive nature, where we begin to see what someone else has accomplished and we want to have either the same or a little bit more. And here again is this reality that no matter how much this individual has acquired in the temporal world, his eyes still are not satisfied with what he has. There is still a longing for something else. Now part of that should tell us that the reality that deep-seated in every human being is the fact that I'm not content with what I have and that I want more is that I will never be satisfied with something that the temporal can provide. No matter how much of the American dream I might grasp to myself, I will still be unsatisfied. And I'll still want more. And the example of that is this individual, who we never could say he's doing it because of what it'll give to his family. He's doing it for someone else and how they can benefit from it. He is doing it for himself. And the reality is he's left empty and still striving after more. And that's why Solomon says, when I look at this individual who's not satisfied with riches, and I look at what he's engaged in doing, it is vanity and a grievous task. In other words, this individual's life is empty. That's the idea of vanity. It's nothingness. It's grasping the wind. It's still a life that is void of any meaningful satisfaction. The second is the fact that it is a life filled with stress. It's a grievous task. His mind doesn't even rest at night. He's still plotting and thinking of how he can get ahead of the competition and do it better than they do. It is a grievous, a frustrating task. And for this individual, he says that the great calamity for such an individual is he never asks the question, why am I doing what I'm doing? In my heritage, I grew up with a very strong work ethic. And I mean, you just didn't have any excuses as to why you wouldn't punch that clock early in the morning and get started. Why? We have a culture and a society that finds its identity in its job. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Temporal things, I need to understand, are always temporal. And for the most part, you and I do not live in a manana culture. We live in a culture that is a rat race. We live in a culture where most of us don't have enough time each day to get done what is before us to do. We live in a culture and in a form of existence where we're on the treadmill, and it seems as if the harder we try, the more we do, the more there is still yet to get done. Now, an easy way to rationalize that is you could say to yourself and maybe to others around you, well, you know, that's job security, because I still have more that I need to do. But the thing I really need to ask myself is, why am I doing what I'm doing? And then Solomon says, why am I doing this grievous, senseless, frustrating labor again and again, and depriving myself of pleasure? In my own experience, I know some individuals that would fall into this category. They have been very successful businessmen and businesswomen, and they don't have any relatives. Their whole life is consumed with their work. And they, in some of the cases, have become multimillionaires. And yet there is still the driving force of wanting to get more. And they never ask the question, why am I engaged in all this activity? When I was in high school, there was a family I was very close to. And the father of that family was a very diligent, industrious individual whose whole life was consumed with his business as a self-employed individual. And we would talk about it at times, and you know, when are you going to go on vacation? When are you going to take a break? Well, I'm planning that for my retirement. And what struck me is that when he retired, he was struck with cancer and was gone. And here we have this experience. Why do you do what you do? I got to make ends meet. I got to fulfill my responsibilities. And we don't want to minimize the fact that as a Christian, my performance in my job should be such that it is superior to the non-Christian because I am serving Jesus Christ. But if I am an individual whose life is dominated by, whose life is consumed by the job that is before me, I need to ask the question, why am I doing what I'm doing and depriving myself of pleasure? It's of beneficial things. God's made many promises to his people, hasn't he? We had them read for us this morning. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and what? All these things will be added to you. Why are you worrying about what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear? Your Father knows you have need of them. And the reality is you can't serve two masters. You can't live for the temporal and your job, and you can't live for the Lord. One will take priority over the other. Why am I not enjoying my life? The demands of the day, I know this all too well personally, can just rob you of just a sense of satisfaction and of enjoyment each day. Now, some individuals have been told, well, find something you like to do and you'll never work a day in your life. You may enjoy it, but you're still going to work because you're in a rat race society and you're in the treadmill and you're either living to be successful and accomplish a lot and have your life consumed in this dog-eat-dog culture, or you've wised up and realized fulfillment and satisfaction isn't found in the things of this world, including my job. What we find is that it becomes an empty, frustrating life. So what is it that the teacher tells us? What does he want us to learn from this? Two are better than one, verse 9, because they have a good return for their labor. This idea of good means they have benefit from it. Now, part of that means the reality that as they work together as a team, they can accomplish more than either would accomplish on their own. But notice Solomon wants to provide us with an understanding of why there is benefit or good return in the labor. And the first example he uses, he says, notice verse 10, if either of them falls, what happens? You know, if I stumble and fall and someone's there with me, they can help me back up. If we have a financial crisis, we can share it together. If there is something that strikes me down, say an illness, I have a companion who can fill in and help in that time. And so he says, when one falls and has a companion, he can be helped up. But if somebody falls alone, guess what? He's alone. He has no one there to help pick him up. The second example he uses is he says, not only is there the ability to pick up someone, to strengthen someone in that time of need when they stumble, there is also the reality that there is support that is there and comfort or warmth. If two lie down together, there's warmth. But if one is by himself, how can he keep warm? We've seen examples on the news of horrific car accidents on some of our major interstates. And people have been stranded in these ice blizzard storms for hours. Some have frozen to death. Others have been able to cuddle up together in a car and body heat being generated in frigid, below freezing temperatures, been able to preserve one another during that time. But if the individual's by himself, eventually hypothermia sets in, and that individual is gone. Solomon gives us another example of the benefit of having a companion, having someone in relationship with me that can help me through those times of distress and difficulty. And that can be emotional help, that can also be tangible, physical, financial help. And then the final example he gives, if an individual is walking all alone and he's met by an attacker, he's not able to overpower the attacker. But if there's two together, there's more chance for success and defeating the attacker than if someone's alone. The companion helps provide some protection for the individual. And so then Solomon says, a cord of three is not easily broken. And what we have is Solomon is making use of what appears to be an ancient proverb. Similar to a proverb we have in our own culture, there is strength where? In numbers. It's a familiar statement. You know, I can take a single piece of thread that's used to sew garments, and I can easily break that single strand of thread. But if I take that strand of thread and wind it again and again and again, so now I have 10, 15, 20 times it's wrapped around something, you're not going to break that apart. What seems to be so insignificant to give any strength or resistance on its own, when it is bound together, provides great strength. And so Solomon says, this poor guy missed what really is important in life. And it isn't how well, how he is consumed with his job and what riches he might possess. But what are the relationships that an individual has as they go through life? Do you remember something God said in the garden? Let's make man in our image and according to our likeness. And then he said, you know, it's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to make a helper suitable for him. And sometimes we forget that God has made us to be social beings. And what is really more important than what I can accomplish and do on my own has to do with the relationships that I cultivate and that I have and the mutual benefit that is derived from them. So what is the perspective we need to gain from this? Well, the first would be very obvious. This workaholic miser is living for whom? Himself. And if in your mind, when you say, looking out for number one, that means you, you have an empty, frustrating life. The miser is a picture of the egotistical individual that's in it for him or herself. What I need to recognize in all of this, that when Solomon does this, and he takes this individual who has no dependence, he's not caring about anyone else, just living for himself, he is taking a common human problem to its nth degree so that each one of us will look at it in our own life and light. Because the pitfall for this individual is the one that all of us are so easily sucked into. To where we get so consumed with what we have to do that we tend to forget what is really most important. And we think that the burden is on us to accomplish what needs to be done. He is a portrayal of the human problem. of where I am devoting on something temporal, and I'm engaged in a life that is consumed with my work, my responsibilities to be successful, and what I need to realize, this is emptiness, that is striving after the wind and vanity, and it is a grievous task. I am going to be filled with stress and frustration, not fulfillment. And the other thing for us to recognize is, why is it a problem for this workaholic? And why is it that you and I are so susceptible as well? Because the real issue in every one of these examples, be it the injustices that he mentioned at the end of chapter 3, be it the oppression of people, beginning of chapter 4, the competitive nature, continuing in 4, or now this workaholic demand of life, is the issue of the heart. It's the issue of the heart. Because what characterizes this individual is envy and greed. And thinking, I need more of this world to be happy. And to me, that's the real point of what Solomon wants us to understand. We can be caught up in the cares of the world. We can be caught up in the deceitfulness of riches and fail to recognize that they choke out the word so it's unfruitful. Remember the parable of the soils taught by the Lord? And if my heart is focused on getting the things of this world because maybe I think I need them, because I'm doing what God called me to do, but I become so consumed by them, I fail to appreciate that what's really important for me is to lay up my treasures where? In heaven. Because then I don't have to worry about somebody stealing. I don't have to worry about what happens when someone steals my identity and gets into all of my accounts. It's a recognition that what God has given me, the first thing is, it's to be enjoyed. And the second would be to be used for His glory and the benefit of others. Isn't that the biblical message from Genesis through Revelation? And that's what Solomon wants us to understand. And as we think of the fact that the real issue is that we can be so preoccupied with what we have to do and what we're seeking to grasp that we fail to cultivate the relationships that are really most essential in our life, and therefore we're going to come up empty and frustrated. So how is it we should look at our lives? What should be our concentration? Well, let me just give you a couple concluding thoughts. The first, and I think this is very important for a Christian community where we have a desire to do what really would please the Lord and use what we have for His glory, is that we are to enjoy what God gives us. It's not sinful to enjoy it. Paul even told Timothy, God has created all things to be richly enjoyed. They are blessings that have come from Him. I shouldn't feel guilty if I'm able to do something someone else can't do. I shouldn't feel guilty if God's given me a blessing that others don't have. I should thank Him for it and enjoy the blessing He's given. The second thing is, I really need to enjoy and cultivate my relationship with the Lord and with others. That's more important than the jobs that are before me each day. And then finally, what's your priority in life? Can you really say with the Apostle Paul, for me to live is Christ? The Lord needs to be the foundation of my life and my focus. I recognize what I have are good gifts that have come from Him, And as I get up each day, it should be, Lord, here I am. Use me. I want my life to be a diadem of praise to you. And the sad reality is you and I live in a culture where people are being rewarded and people are being praised who are greedy, egotistical, self-centered individuals. And we almost try to promote that in the next generation. And what I need to recognize is how swift and how overwhelming will be the downfall of those who have lived for themselves. And so I need not fret because I see the evildoers prospering in their way. I need to be sure that I don't become envious of the workers of iniquity who don't have the same problems and pressures that I face in life. What I need to recognize is that as a Christian, I have countless blessings that the people of this world can never even know, let alone experience. And the greatest of all blessings is Christ died for my sins. My sins have been forgiven. He's paid it all, and there is no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus. And the one who didn't spare his own son but delivered him up for us all, how will he not with him freely give us all things? What a privilege, what a blessing to be a child of God. And God showers me with provisions each day to be gratefully received, to be enjoyed as a gift from him, and providing me with opportunities that I can be used of him to touch the lives of others in just simple little ways of cultivating relationships and making sure that my priority is that I may know him, that I grow in my relationship with Christ, and he truly is the focus of my life. Why are you doing what you're doing? That's a fundamental question for every one of us to ask. And I need to be able to answer it to say, I'm doing it because I want to honor Christ. And if that's the case, it's not empty, it's not toilsome, it's not stressful. But when you're doing it to gain it for yourself, you're going to be frustrated and left empty. May God give us the grace to live each day as a gift from him, truly for his glory. Let's pray.